Oh, my CV's full of gaps, full of holes. It looks like I ain't done nothing for 5 years. Hello and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan and I'm here with the ever gnarly Adam.
Alan, mate. How you doing? You're right. Why am I gnarly?
You're gnarly because I'm deeply ingrained in surfer culture. I'm thinking of naught but the waves, Adam. And the lingo has been, it's sort of infected my mind.
So you've embodied this kind of persona now as a surfer. You're hanging around with lots of cool guys, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm gnarly, I'm steezy, I'm just a chilled out dude. I've been surfing a lot here. I'm broadcasting to you now from the top of a rooftop in a hostel. There's the sound of birds, there's peacocks around, there's people chatting, there's a man in the not too far distance who's decided to, use what can only be described as a circular saw to remove cocoa nuts from their respective trees. It's a noisy environment, but none of it can faze me. I'm so chilled out from surfing the waves.
Is it not a prerequisite to have long hair if you're going to surf?
And listeners will be interested to hear, I've made my hair really short recently. So it's a juxtapositional activity for me.
You've always been so alternative. That's what I love about you. You never play by the rule book, do you?
Yeah, regardless of the subculture.
So how many surf lessons are you doing a day then?
Just one a day.
Okay.
5 days a week.
Wow.
In surf school. I've devoted myself to the ancient art of surfing.
And I know we don't proclaim to be a travel guide per se.
A surfing podcast.
But how much would one anticipate spending on a surf lesson in Kerala, where you are?
Yeah, like $15 for a group lesson, $5 to rent a board, transport included. I'm out there on the waves. It's pretty easy. It's pretty chill. It's a little bit of a pricier endeavor. I'm, spending $70 for the whole week of surfing.
But you're enjoying it, though. You're having lots of fun. One question I've got for you is, are the surfing instructors Indian? Or is this kind of the surfing equivalent of scuba diving, whereby there are lots of backpackers that have been taken by scuba diving or surfing, and now they're instructors themselves?
Yeah, all my surf instructors are Indian, and they're ever so good at surfing. My goodness, you should see them out there whipping around on the waves like dancers. But actually, most of the time they spend in the water, they've not got their boards. They're just sort of pushing me and the other beginners onto the waves. But I'm just starting to be able to hunt and find my own waves. I'm standing up on waves myself. I'm really enjoying it now. So surfing is quite a unique sport in that it's completely reliant on one aspect of nature. And a lot of the time you're just like hunting and waiting for this aspect of nature to reveal itself, at which point all these techniques that you learn serve only to increase the window of time with which you can catch that wave. You know, if your paddle's really strong, if your pop-up's really perfect, all these are doing are increasing that period of time where the wave picks you up and you can get onto it. I love that feeling, man.
Right, so it's important to kind of pop and lock almost as quickly as possible, kind of get that sort of stance locked in, and then you're prepared for the wave that's about to come, right?
You've got a paddle to meet the speed of the wave, and then at the moment where it gets you, you start rising up on it, you take that opportunity to pop up on the board and then ride the gravity of that wave downwards. These are called green waves, the waves before the water has broken into white water. You surf that gravitational pull. It's an amazing feeling. It's unlike anything else in the world, I think. And it just, oh man, I love travel so much because you couldn't get that variety of activities. I'm eating Indian food. I'm on a rooftop of a hostel. I'm doing a podcast. I'm riding tuk-tuks. I'm surfing. I love travel.
You're built for it, mate. You are built for it. Around surf and surfing culture, is there a wicked community as well of people who are there maybe learning like you are, but also seasoned surfers, and everyone's quite supportive, are they?
awful, spiteful characters they are out on this water, just trying to snatch every wave for their grubby selves. No, everyone's really amazing. I really think that's a cool aspect of surfing culture as well. Everyone like really wants you to do well. They'll see you catch a wave and everyone's like, yeah, whooping and whistling as you make your way to shore. It's a cool thing. I feel very, very supported by the community. And doing group classes like I am doing is really cool because you're learning with other people, you're going for dinner with them afterwards, breakfast or whatever. And
surf and turf, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly, mate. All the surf and turf. But I really think it's good, man. It's good to have a community of other students.
No, completely. And is everyone sort of similar levels to you?
Yeah, everyone's just starting out really, because there comes a point in surfing where you've just got to put practice in. Mm-hmm. So I probably spent more time out on the water than most people because I was surfing a lot with Johnny in Sri Lanka.
Right.
But because I was doing it on my own without any tutelage, maybe got into some bad habits. So I'm just sort of ironing out and trying to learn a little bit better and more cerebrally now. And it's going ever so well, man. Like I say, I'm finding ways on my own, I'm standing up on my own, I'm surfing the green ones, and I'm making it all the way to shore, where I promptly hop off my surfboard and go and have a latte whilst watching the other surfers. It's very nice.
That's wicked, mate. And it makes you happy, which is really important. It's one of those things that, you know, you would have to travel somewhere to do, unless of course you were going to go down to
Cornwall,
Newquay,
yeah,
in the southwest of Cornwall. Yeah. But much like scuba diving, I often say this to people, is that it's such a shame that there must be people out there that maybe don't travel or don't seek out things like scuba diving, who would in fact fall in love with something like scuba diving if they just had the chance to do it.
Yeah, and touching on that, I think where I'm at with travel now, the headspace I'm in, is that I really want to do like skill accumulative things whilst traveling.
Yeah.
I no longer want to just spend a month traveling around and just seeing sights, really. I want to bunker down and do stuff, whether that's surfing or scuba diving or yoga or meditation or all these different things. I want travel to be a sort of like amazing training course of life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Give your trip a purpose or direction, right? Like I'm exactly the same. I've been thinking a lot recently about how I want my travels to be governed. And I think focusing on languages and food and drink culture, trying to learn how to cook and this kind of thing will be a really, really fantastic focal point of my travels and just allow my travels to be governed by those. I met a lovely Swedish lady called Anna Lee in Sevilla a few weeks ago. And she was touring around the south of Spain, and the focus for her trip was flamenco dancing. So there was a big flamenco festival. She is a flamenco dancer back in Sweden. And I was just so inspired by the fact that she was going on this big sort of backpacking trip around the south of Spain and going to lots of flamenco evenings and lessons and workshops and stuff. I really wanted to get involved. I thought that's nothing that's ever been on my radar. But what a cool way to travel through dance.
Just cascading through the world, meeting people, and that which takes your fancy, you can do. Travel is nothing but ultimate freedom. And I think too often we think of it as like, oh, we're traveling now, and therefore we're moving from place to place. We're doing thing and going to this place and that place and this place and that place. But you can just stop, go, oh, this thing I've heard takes my fancy, I'm going to just learn to do that for a month, and that's fine as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was talking to some guys last night at the hostel, and we were having this exact discussion. And after a while, it might take, a good few months of backpacking around a region. But there does become a point where you think, what am I doing? Like, I'm holidaying every day for the most part. And it's important to challenge these things, I think, you know, to ask yourself what you really want to get out of a trip. But I think by learning a new skill or trying to accumulate lots of different skills and, whether it's languages or food and drink culture, it's maybe likely to be more sustainable and give your trip longevity, I think.
Yeah, totally. And I've actually met people who are traveling and they start having resume anxiety, CV anxiety, where they're like, oh, my CV's full of gaps, full of holes. It looks like I ain't done nothing for 5 years because I just offed myself into South America and then journeyed about. So how am I ever going to be employed? But I think done correctly, travel becomes this amazing smorgasbord that makes your CV look really good. Oh, I did this type of volunteering work in this, like, part of the jungle. Oh, I volunteered at a surf camp. Oh, I was working in hospitality here. I was doing all this. That you can fill your resume with travel activities if you see it as this opportunity as opposed to this big long holiday.
Yeah. And you know, if you're listening to this now and you are worried about taking a lot of time off work or taking a career break and going backpacking, then please send us an email at tripologypodcast@gmail.com and I will answer any questions, because Alan, you know me better than most, and my CV has got so many holes in that, yeah, I mean, I've had those feelings.
You printed it on quite cheap paper when we were on the farm, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a mouse in here somewhere. But no, seriously, I mean, if you are thinking about doing something like that and you do have these anxieties about it, then do pop us an email and we can have a you know, very open chat back and forth about how you're feeling and sort of ways around it, because I've been through it over the last 10 years. I've worked very little, I think, but still managed to accelerate my career. And I think that's a really interesting thing. If you change the market that you're in, if you travel, if you add skills, you will become incredibly employable, more so than you think. So if what you want to do is ultimately work for someone else and not travel for the rest of your life, it's all there for you.
Yeah, and I've spoken to great big bosses of great big businesses, the kind of people who walk around with perhaps a tie on and a little handkerchief tucked into their breast pocket, and they've told me that they'd actually employ someone who had seen the world and done some traveling and shown through their travels that they have empathy and an awareness of the world around them. They find those sorts of people far more employable than the kind of person who just stuck themselves in an office as soon as they were fresh out of college and really tightly packed themselves into a cubicle as hard as they could get there and stayed there and were disciplined for years and years and years.
Yeah, you know, it's about differentiating yourself from the person next to you, I suppose. And if you've got a really cool story to tell, or you know, you can hang 10 on a gnarly wave, bro, then you know, that might give you the edge.
Yeah, and speaking of the edge, I feel on edge now. It's time for me to meditate. There's a person with a circular saw. I can see them. They've got it on the end of a stick. They're hacking down coconuts by the tens. So let's just calm ourselves down. Let's have a brief meditation break. And I've got something I desperately want to talk to you about when we return to the conscious world. See you there. There we go. Almost as if it was substance, almost as if it was a real tangible thing made of a solid or a liquid, but certainly not a gas. Our conscious minds return into our brains and we're here. In the second half of Tripology, Adam, I texted you in the week. I said, I need to do something on Tripology. I need to talk to you about something. And that something is, well, I mean, there's only one place on Tripology where we can discuss this kind of thing. It's the item that absolutely no one has asked for, widely regarded as the least popular item on Tripology, a space that, I mean, not even one email saying, when are we going to see Alan's miscellaneous travel item return? But here it is. Play the theme music. Good theme music, I thought. Nice to have theme music like that. Alan's miscellaneous travel item. What I want to talk about, Adam, is the horror. The abject, is maybe the worst thing that can happen to you whilst traveling.
Okay.
You check into a hostel. You've written your passport number down on a sheet of paper. They've gone, oh, what city are you going to next? What city do you come from? Sign here. What's your email address? Perhaps a WhatsApp number. Okay, you're ready to see your room. They take you up the stairs to your dorm room and all of the bottom bunks are taken. You have to put your bag on the floor and then journey up that little flimsy ladder to the top bunk where you will spend the remainder of your time at that hostel. Over the course of the last few weeks, I have been no stranger to the top bunk. In fact, it has been my domicile in every single hostel I attended up until this one, just stretching back a couple of weeks.
Oh, Lord, I feel for you, mate, because even though I'm fine with the top bunk. I know that you find it incredibly difficult and it wouldn't be your first choice. It probably wouldn't even be your second choice. I'm surprised that you haven't either put in a transfer request or asked if you can sleep on the floor.
I mean, mate, I actually know this about you. You're sometimes partial to a top bunk. So I want to talk about that. On Alan's Miscellaneous Travel Hour, I'm going to talk about things I hate about the top bunk. And I mean, when I was traveling with Johnny, we had a rock, paper, scissors system.
Cool.
For when there was a bunk allotted for me and him, who gets top, who gets bottom, best of one, rock, paper, scissors, sudden death. He went undefeated across four different hostels and I was given the top bunk.
That surprises me.
I know. I mean, I pride myself on being quite a psychologically dominant rock, paper, scissors player. But once, you know, he got in my head, I wanted it more badly than him. So he always had an advantage from that perspective. He frankly pulled my pants down on the rock, paper, scissors front every single time. And I ended up there on the top bunk, a place that I despise to be.
That's so funny. I would have put money on you winning those bets, not just because you're an amazing rock, paper, scissors player, but also because I know how much you do not want the top bunk. And is he as opposed to the top bunk as you are, mate?
I mean, he doesn't like the top bunk, but I think that over the course of losing...
Am I in the minority or what? Am I some loco backpacker that would prefer the top? Am I like on my own?
Well, you can definitely talk about why you prefer it. I mean, look... I was put in the top bunk in a hostel that I'd booked four nights in. Mm-hmm. When I first came back to India after Sri Lanka, I booked four straight nights in a hostel. I was like, I'm just going to chill for a little bit. Johnny's gone. I'm going to revive myself just socially and everything. I'm going to take some time.
Right.
And so 4 days in a hostel is a lot for me. It's like, that's a big booking. So I was excited just to not have to worry about where I'm going to stay next, all this stuff. Horror, they put me in the top bunk. And not only did they put me in the top bunk, but it was a shitty top bunk. It was without rails.
Oh, dangerous.
It was rickety, so that, you know, the ascending the bunk or descending the bunk resulted in the kind of wobble mm-hmm. that you might expect from frankly a practical joke. It was ridiculous. It was like the Leaning Tower of Pisa going up that thing. The absence of rails. I'm someone who sleeps with a lot of things all littered around my bed. I'll have my glasses case, my contact lens case, maybe my contact lens solution, a bottle of water. All these things exist around me as I sleep.
Yeah.
On every single night that I spent on that bunk, one of those things fell off in the middle of the night as the result of an errant limb. I knocked my glasses case down the bunk and onto the floor, waking up everyone in the room.
Excellent.
I knocked my bottle of water down onto the bunk below me, where the person below me had to pick it up and pass it back up to me at 3 a.m.
Perfect.
I was basically like Zeus throwing lightning bolts down at the Grecian population, except it was me, a sleepy traveler, throwing water bottles down on the other bunk mates.
What a nightmare. Were people understanding, or are you just really apologetic, saying, yeah, sorry, it's not ideal?
My bunk mates were very understanding, because they too, I'm sure, at some point in their travels, witnessed the horrors of being on the top bunk.
Sure, yeah.
So that made it a little bit better. But the horrors didn't end there, Adam, because frankly, hot air rises.
Right.
So a room that was already swelteringly hot was intolerable being on the top bunk. But the one saving grace was that I was close to the fan.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I was so close to the fan that when I outstretched in the morning and put my shirt on, for the first time ever, I punched that fan accidentally, trying to put my finger through a sleeve.
No.
And it severed. I mean, if you go to youtube.com/tropologypodcast right now, you'll be able to see. It's like severed my finger in twain. So there you go. It's not an incredibly difficult situation, but I mean, annoying enough that, it was bleeding.
I mean, but there was a protective case on the fan, right?
I mean, it was a plastic fan. So from that perspective, a case was protective, but it was going at speeds.
Oh, okay.
The kind of speeds that an engineer designed to try and suppress the ungodly heat of India. So I think it was going more revolutions per second than your average fan.
And then, sorry, tell me when this happened. Was this in the middle of the night that you cut your finger?
No, this was in the morning. This was first thing in the morning. I was sort of like, you know, that kind of music was playing, like, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. I was like, oh, waking up. I put my hand through my sleeve and was abruptly awoken by the fan.
God. Was anyone else in your room on the top bunk having the same issues you were?
Funnily enough, all the people who were on the top bunk in that room didn't seem to want to socialize very much. Funnily enough, we were all in a bad mood. Funnily enough, we all seemed a bit underslept. Funnily enough, our fingers were all bleeding. Funnily enough, none of us went to the family dinner that hostel held on a Friday night. Funnily enough, we all tried to get to bed at 7 a.m. to avoid waking everyone else up in the whole room. So no, I didn't speak to anyone else on the top bunk.
Oh, God. I'm sorry to hear that. As a top bunker, you know, I've got to fly the flag. I don't mind it. I am, ironically, currently staying on a bottom bunk. I am recording this from a dorm, and this hostel that I'm staying in at the moment, the Wine Hostel in Porto, highly recommend. It's an amazing hostel. The staff are incredible. And if you like wine, which I do, then they've got all the sort of tours they can sort out, lots of recommendations and this kind of stuff. So yeah, really, really, really amazing hostel, really enjoying it. And they've put me up in a 6-bed dorm, and I'm just recording. They're just allowing me to have the room for a couple of hours, which is amazing. But in my other room, I am staying on a bottom bunk. And I've got to tell you, Alan, I'm loving it, mate.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, if only I had the nous to go and ask my hosts here if I could have a dorm room to record in, then perhaps I wouldn't be here surrounded by the Cocoa Man. But I mean, it's very interesting. You say that you like the bottom bunk, but you've also told me you like the top bunk. When I was given a bottom bunk here, I almost cried and hugged the man that gave it to me.
Oh, God.
After so many days on the top. So tell me, what is it about the top that you find in any way superior or even equivalent to the bottom?
It's the privacy. It's really the level of privacy. It's the fact that I feel like I'm kind of tucked away from the rest of the room. I feel like I can leave things on my bed and worry about them less. Look, I'll hold my hands up, mate. If someone wants to steal something from the top bunk, it's going to be pretty fucking straightforward. But for some reason, I just feel like there's another layer of protection.
Do you think it gives you like a vantage point? Like it was protection from your belongings being stolen. It's also like a private vantage point. You can see people, but they can't see you type of thing.
Yeah, like man with a bow and arrow at the top of a castle turret.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you always told me, I prefer eagles to rabbits, haven't you? You prefer things that exist high up than things that exist on the ground floor.
Yeah, it's a strange one, but I have spoken to other people who I've tried to basically explain my side of the story. And people either sort of don't care, or some of them agree. But I think most people I've found prefer the bottom bunk, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think most people are on a spectrum of sanity and therefore take that position most of the time. I don't see the redeeming features of the top bunk. It's horrible up there. I feel like it's, you know, the act of going to the toilet results in you being so awake by the time you get back into your one-story bedroom that you'll never sleep again. It's really awful. And while I'm on the topic, sometimes I've been in places where the top bunk doesn't have a charger, but the bottom bunk does, because chargers tend to exist in rooms lower down. So unless the power sockets have been explicitly designed for bunkage,
right,
then you get shortchanged on that front as well.
The two things I'd like to say. The first one is, I would agree that if you're someone like me who tries not to go to the bathroom during the middle of the night, you know, maybe you go beforehand before you fall asleep, and then, you know, obviously you go first thing when you wake up or whatever. You might be drinking through the night a bit of water, the aforementioned bottle of water on the bed. However, I do think you're more likely to wet yourself if you're on the top bunk, because it is sometimes a pain in the ass to get down and you don't want to disturb people. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Okay.
Because, you know, that sort of inner turmoil.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the primary concern, but.
Do I get down? Should I just wet myself and not wake the rest of the room up and deal with it in the morning? Or should I get down the rickety ladder, risk rolling the entire bed over? At which point you wake up everyone anyway.
That is the eternal dilemma of the top bunk.
Yeah. So and the other thing I wanted to say was, I was in a hostel in Lisbon a few nights ago, and I encountered a bed system sort of configuration, if you like, that I've never seen before in my life. It was a 3-bed dorm, and the beds, the way they were set out was almost like staggered steps. So there was a top bunk, and then there was a bottom bunk, but there was a middle bunk, but the middle bunk was like set off to the left-hand side. So the top bunk was half over the middle bunk, and the middle bunk was half over the bottom bunk.
Really? Okay, yeah.
Does that make any sense to you whatsoever? Can you imagine what I'm trying to describe?
Yeah, I can imagine it. But the only time I've ever seen something that approximates that is when there's been a double bed on the bottom and then a single bed on the top. So you get that sort of tiered system.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be looking at this thing sort of face on, and the beds were all up against the wall, but they're part of the same wooden structure. It's almost like a half-opened drawer of a chest of drawers, and we're all kind of sleeping in them. It was pretty cozy, to be fair. I mean, it was fun. I'd never seen it. It was a good use of space.
Quite remarkable, isn't it? It's quite remarkable what hostels have the propensity to get wrong and what some hostels have the propensity to get right.
Mm.
Like, if I was going to set up a hostel, top of my agenda would be, let's try and make the beds normal. Let's try and make them some approximation of what human beings consider a bed to be. A mattress, you know, a privacy curtain must cost about $1 to set up.
Yeah.
Versus not having one. It should be a prerequisite, shouldn't it?
I think so. I think there's a few other things. So why don't we just go on record to say, and this is my pledge to you, Alan.
Yeah.
One day in the future, I would love for us to own a hostel or a chain of hostels.
Yeah.
I would love it.
Yeah.
Backpacking accommodation in any form. And I think it would be really, really cool. However,
all bottom bunks, the whole room. The whole room's going to stop at 1 meter tall, and there's going to be nothing above that height.
Yeah, we'll deliver three things. Bottom bunks only, free towels and locks, and shakshuka every morning.
Yeah, exactly.
And what more do you want?
And people will come up to us and say, oh, do you have any bottom bunks available? As I often do. And we'll say, we only have bottom bunks available. And we'll smile at them with the kind of loving smile that travellers want to see, and they'll never stay anywhere else again.
Yeah, God. No, I would love that one day, mate. And I think when you stay in hostels as often as we do and sort of around the world, you do like to pick and choose. And maybe after a while, you start to think about how things could be different. But I'm also like quite accommodating as a guest, I think. I really don't ask for much. And if I've got to pay a couple of extra euros for a towel, I do. I mean, I then take it with me, so it's a cheap towel, but...
Yeah. I find that abhorrent as well. When we're in Tropology Hostel, bottom bunks only, there'll be privacy curtains on every bed, towels will be free of charge.
Free of charge?
Mate, you shouldn't have to rent a towel in a hostel. It's a little thing that someone can do, a hostel can do, that makes your stay a lot nicer, doesn't it? When you're not having to use your little smelly microfiber that you've had with you for 8 years on the road.
And can I make another suggestion as well? What about those nice little towel... slippers. We can sort of give those to every guest. You know, they're fairly sort of cheap and allow people to walk around in comfort.
These are how the first hotels started. It was people like me and you thinking of how to improve hostels. And they were like, well, come to think of it, why don't we make every room a private room? Oh, we'll have to charge a bit more. Yeah, but we'll give them a free bathrobe. Okay, yeah.
It's going to be a Tropology spa quite quickly.
I like the word hostel, but what if we could remove some of the consonants?
Well, it's all there for us, mate. I think it remains to be seen, but who knows where this is going to go. And I really, really hope that one day we do have a hostel, and what an interesting experience that would be.
There we go. Alan's miscellaneous travel item. Adam, it's what can only be described as hot here. Too hot to continue recording. I'm sweating again.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that if you want on youtube.com/Tropology Podcast. Adam posts... I mean, a lot of amazing content over on Instagram, instagram.com/Tropology Podcast. We're doing amazing things in the travel space. Some say we're the best damn podcast to come out of India and Spain simultaneously. And I tend to agree with them. There's a man cutting coconuts. There's birds are chirping. You're looking at me with the eyes of a man rested, relaxed, someone who's broken free of the 9-to-5 mundanity and is living a life on the road, fit to inspire people around the world. I can't wait to hear more stories from you. I can't wait to live more stories from me. Here we are, Tropology Podcast. I'm thinking about going off to next week, where we'll meet the listening audience. Will you come with me?
I will, mate. But before then, we've got the Lost and Found. So if you want to join us for more, head to patreon.com/tripologypodcast. We'll see you there.
We'll see you there.
Bye. Bye.